Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Pravishya tat tirtha varam. Adirajat sahat majah. Dadarsha munimasinam. Tasmin hutahutashanam. Vidyotamanam vapusha. Tapyas uruyujachiram. Nati kshamam bhagavatar. Snigdapam avalokanat. Tadvyaritam vitakala. Piyusha shravanena cha. Pram shum padma palak. Aksham palash aksham jatilam chira vasasam upasam shritya malinam yatarhanam asamskritam. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Entering that most sacred spot with his daughter, and going near the sage, the first monarch, Swayambhuva Manu, saw the sage sitting in his hermitage, having just propitiated the sacred fire by pouring oblations into it. His body shone most brilliantly. Though he had engaged in austere penance for a long time, he was not emaciated, for the Lord had cast his affectionate sidelong glance upon him, and he had also heard the nectar flowing from the moon-like words of the Lord. The sage was tall. His eyes were large, like the petals of a lotus, and he had matted locks on his head. He was clad in rags. Swayambhuva Manu approached and saw him to be somewhat soiled, like an unpolished gem. Purport. Here are some descriptions of a brahmachari yogi. In the morning, the first duty of a brahmachari seeking spiritual elevation is hutahutashana, to offer sacrificial oblations to the Supreme Lord. Those engaged in brahmacharya cannot sleep until 7 or 9 o'clock in the morning. They must rise early in the morning, at least 1.5 hours before the sun rises, and offer oblations. Or in this age, they must chant the holy name of the Lord, Hare Krishna, as referred to by Lord Chaitanya. Kalau nastyeva 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 gatir anyata. There is no other alternative in this age to chanting the holy name of the Lord. The brahmachari must rise early in the morning, and after placing himself, he should chant the holy name of the Lord. From the very features of the sage, it appeared that he had undergone great austerities. That is the sign of one observing brahmacharya, the vow of celibacy. If one lives otherwise, it will be manifest in the lust visible in his face and body. The word vidyotamanam indicates that the brahmachari feature showed in his body. That is the certificate that one has undergone great austerity in yoga. A drunkard or smoker or sex monger can never be eligible to practice yoga. Generally, yogis look very skinny because of their not being comfortably situated. But Kardama Muni was not emaciated, for he had seen the Supreme Personality of Godhead face to face. Here the word Snigda Apanga Avalokanat means that he was fortunate enough to see the Supreme Lord face to face. He looked healthy because he had directly received the nectarian sound vibrations from the lotus lip of the Personality of Godhead. Similarly, one who hears the transcendental sound vibration of the holy name of the Lord, Hare Krishna, also improves in health. We have actually seen that many brahmacharis and grihastas connected with the International Society for Krishna Consciousness have improved in health, and a luster has come to their faces. It is essential that a brahmachari engaged in spiritual advancement look very healthy and lustrous. The comparison of the sage to an unpolished gem is very appropriate. Even if a gem just taken from a mine looks unpolished, the luster of the gem cannot be stopped. Similarly, although Kardama was not properly dressed and his body was not properly cleansed, his overall appearance was gem-like. Kardama is here described by Prabhupada in the purport as a brahmachari and a yogi, performer of austerities. But the manifest, the visible result of his having denied himself sense gratification is not that he's not emaciated. It says specifically, not diksham, not too much emaciated. You would think, after taking to all the difficult tapas that he obviously had been taking to, that he should be shriveled up and weak, but he's not. He's actually quite healthy. And the luster is shining in his eyes that shows that his health is good and his consciousness is good. Anyway, Prabhupada in the purport discusses how a brahmachari should live. It's important for anyone who wants to actually be considered civilized, he should go through this training. At least every male should spend several years of his early life getting this brahmachari training. It is there for the three higher classes, for everyone who is going to take upanayanam, or actually upanayanam, the acceptance of the sacred thread, is the official beginning of brahmachari life. Before upanayanam, he's still a child on his mother's lap. But by taking the sacred thread, whether he takes it from his father or from some other guru, then he's no more a baby at home. He's supposed to be now a student going to the Gurukula to take shelter of the teachers who will train him up properly. Otherwise, if that isn't done, what's the use of the samskara ceremony? If the boy doesn't enter then the actual brahminical brahmachari training, then what's the use of just going through the pretense of giving him the thread and make him be a brahmachari for one day? What's the use of that? It's just a show. Anyway, this is not only for the brahmanas, but for the other two higher classes, the kshatriyas and vaishyas. They also should go through brahmachari training, for some time at least, for some few years at least. Otherwise, those who do not take upanayanam and don't undergo gurukula training, they cannot be considered anything better than shudras. For the shudras, there is no brahmachari ashram. There is only one ashram for the shudras. They cannot take sannyas, they cannot take vanaprastha, and they cannot even take brahmacharya. They simply, the one ashram for the shudras is the grihastha ashram. The one thing that keeps the sudras under control is that they should get married, have a wife, and not be profligate. That's their ashram, their spiritual order. But for anyone better than a shudra, he has to get the training in the Gurukula. Their training is first of all in sense control, mind and sense control, shamo dhamma. You should learn, of course this is specifically for the brahmanas. Brahmanas have to be especially fixed in shama and dhamma, tapakshao chum, kshantir arjavamevacha, gyanam, vijnanam astikyam, brahma karma sabhavajam. Where Krishna in the 18th chapter of the Gita is listing the proper occupational activities of each of the four varnas, classes, occupational classes. But it's peculiar that the activities, the karma for a Brahman is not what you would normally think of activities. They're more internal functions or even just attitudes. Astikyam means faith, belief in the authority of the Vedas and the existence of God. What we call theism. But it's not just, I believe in God, credo in unum deum. You just recite the prayer or the catechism. I believe in God, sign the dotted line, I believe. No, it's more than that. In fact, it's not just belief that there is a God, but you have to also accept the authority of the Vedas, and then you're considered astika, a theist. You may have some sentimental conception of God, but if you don't accept Vedic authority, then from the Vedic point of view, you're still nastika. Astika, real definition, is you accept the authority of the Vedas. So that's not a thing you do, that's an attitude. And that's on the list of activities or the occupational duties of the Brahmins. First business of a Brahmin is to have the right attitude. What he does is secondary. If whatever he does, he does with the right attitude, it's brahminical. And if he doesn't have the right attitude, he's not a real Brahmana. If he's a Nastika, then he may be technically a Brahmana, but he's not of much use spiritually. Shat karma nipuno vipro. Mantra tantra vishada daha. A Vaishnavo guru na syat. Swapacho Vaishnavo guruhu. The Brahman may be vipra. He may be very learned. He may have read many books and memorized them and know so many shlokas and so many mantras. Mantra tantra vishada daha. He may be very expert in mantras and tantras, Vedic mantras and tantric formulas, and he may be able to do magic and know so many arts and sciences. Shat karma nipuno, and he may be expert in the six technical occupational duties of a brahmana. Patana patana, according to Manusmriti, the six occupational duties of a brahmana, Krishna is talking about in the Gita, really the inner activities and the attitudes of a Brahmana. If you want to hear about what externally a Brahman does, you can read in the Manusmriti, six occupational duties. Patana patana yajana yajana dana patigraha. These are the activities of a Brahmana. He should study and he should teach. Pat means to read. So he should read books and he should teach others how to read the books. Or if they can't read, at least tell them what's in the books. Yajana, he should worship the Supreme, either through Vedic sacrifice or through deity worship, or in Kali Yuga, by Harinam Sankirtana, he should do worship. Yajna is Sankirtana Prayaya. In Kali Yuga, there may be various performances. We do deity worship daily. We perform fire sacrifices once in a while on special occasions for initiations, for births and deaths, marriages, for life, for important moments in life. We also perform fire sacrifice. We also perform dhyana, meditation. When the practice of chanting and hearing Krishna's names becomes perfect, then it turns into smaranam, remembrance of Krishna. So meditation is also there. But our primary activity, on the foundation on which everything else is possible, is Harinam Sankirtan, simply Kirtana, just chanting Krishna's names. That's our primary yajana. But every Brahmana should worship. According to the circumstance, time and place, the worship may be in different forms. Jai Shri Gornitai, Shri Krishna Balaram, Kiriraj Maharaj Ki Jai. And then, along with, just like Patana and Patana, read and also teach, study and teach, worship and engage others in worship. The others who don't know how to do it, go to the Brahmanas to do their worship for them. And they teach others how to do worship at home and otherwise. Dana Patigraha. Last two activities, give charity, and then accept charity. Last on the list is you can accept some charity. If you do the other five, then you deserve to take charity. Not that your only interest is Brahma Bhojana. Your only interest is in the last one, taking. Feed me, I'm a Brahmana, give me money. But if you don't do the other five, you're not fit, you don't deserve to demand. Of course, we have to be respectful to the Brahmanas. Krishna warns us, don't be disrespectful to the Brahmanas. When Mahaprabhu went to Gaya to do the Shraddha for his father, he went to the Vishnupada place, the place where Lord Vishnu's feet were installed, to do the Shraddha there. And there, the Pandas, the priests, are very notorious, greedy, and demanding. But he dealt with them nicely. He satisfied the Pandas with his sweet words and avoided giving them money. He didn't give them money, but he also didn't insult them. So we have to be careful. Even if we know that a Brahmin is undeserving, still we should not be disrespectful. These are the six duties. Shatkarma Nipuno. A Brahmin may be expert in these. He may be learned. He may be capable of chanting so many mantras and quoting from the Vedas or from the Tantras, Puranas. A Vaishnava Guru Nasyat. But if he's not a Vaishnava, if he's a Nastika, faithless man, then it's all useless. He should not be accepted as a Guru. You certainly should not take Diksha from him. But you should not, if he presents himself as guru, you should not take him seriously. You should not even take serious instruction from him. Because he's not fit to be a guru. He's not a Vaishnava. Swapacho, Vaishnava guruhu. But even someone born in the family of dog eaters, and maybe he's only trained up, his education is just a dog eater's education. Still, if he's a Vaishnava, he should be accepted as guru. Of course, if you can get a Vaishnava who is a Vipra and is expert in the Shastra, that's very good. But even if he isn't, even if he's low class by birth and by training, if he's devoted to Krishna, he has to be accepted as a guru. Swayambhuva Manu is accepting this brahmachari as the prospective groom for his daughter. First of all, because he's a devotee of Narayana. Otherwise, even though he's an austere brahmachari and he's showing all the signs of it, that would not be enough to satisfy Swayambhuva Manu. He's looking for a Paka Vaishnava to marry his daughter to. And therefore, he's very eager to accept Kardama, even though he's not so polished, he's not, nicely dressed and cleaned up. But that's superficial. A trip to the barber and to the cloth merchant, he can be decked up nicely and be ready to get married. We'll be reading in the next verses, the good part of the rest of this chapter, the interchange, the discussion between Kardama and Kashyap, bringing Kashyap, Kardama and Swayambhuva Manu, how we should be very impressed how respectful they are to one another, how much they appreciate one another, even though they're quite different. One is a great king who's not used to being without opulence and all facilities and without being worshipped. And the other is a sage who's living alone in the forest, not interested in any of these kingly opulences and power at all. They seem to be persons with quite different interests. But here their interests overlap. They want to cooperate by donating their son and their daughter, rather son. I mean, Kardama wants to get married to beget the Supreme Lord as his son. Swayambhuva wants to get his daughter married to a proper husband. Who's more proper than a great austere sage, devotee of Narayan, and future Prajapati, future begetter of great children? Kapila, of course, is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He's going to take birth as Kardama's son. And also 9 daughters, who also will make a great contribution to human progress. They will get married to other sages. This is early on in the reign of Swayambhuva Manu. Prime job at hand is to get the universe populated. They need some good Prajapatis. So, Hare Krishna. The daughters of Kardama, the 9 daughters, are going to marry other Prajapatis and help populate the universe with good population. So Kardama is the right candidate. You want to be Prajapati? You want to have a whole crowd of children? And, you know, if that's your idea of a happy life, this is the standard of qualification. You should undergo a training of austerity. Not that we can imitate the sages of the past ages, but if you want to be a successful grihastha in Krishna consciousness, get some brahmachari training first. Otherwise, you don't have much hope for success. You need this training. You want to be Prajapati, you have to be trained up first as brahmachari. Hare Krishna. So I'll stop there. Hare Krishna. Any questions or comments?
Yes, ma'am. I remember you mentioned in classes before that in general, reading, was not a way to study shastras. It was by memorizing, by hearing.
Yes.
But this shloka that you quoted from
Patana.
Patana, what means to read?
No, it doesn't mean to read the words on a page. It means to recite. So you went in the old system before they resorted to books. Paper and writing was used for laundry lists and shopping lists, for letters. You know, you want to write a letter to somebody, you write it on parchment. But the shastra, to study the Vedas and even other shastras from books was considered aparad, offensive. You should study by hearing and memorizing. Only in Kali Yuga we can't do that. But that's the traditional system. You learn by hearing and reciting. So Patana means that. The teacher recites the mantra, you repeat it. That's Patana. It's reciting. It's not scanning the line on a piece of paper. That's Kali Yuga Patana. Okay? And now we, you know, do it on the computer screen. Yeah, but that's... You know, who knows what the next generation, what they'll be doing. The books will be always speaking to them, you know, synthesized voice. But the real pata, is to hear from the guru and repeat what he says. Recitation. Okay? Of course, Prabhupada's books, some criticize that we're not getting proper shiksha because the guru is not physically present. That hearing by reading the book is not the real thing. Hearing the mantra from a tape recording is bogus. But Prabhupada gave it to us as a bona fide process. You know, the Diksha we received from the tape recording of Prabhupada, now the tape recording is available in folio, so anyone can give himself Diksha, the new folio. The Prabhupada, for some reason, they put the recording of Prabhupada giving the Gayatri Mantra in the folio. So now you can give yourself Diksha. Yeah. But that's bona fide. To hear from the tape or to read from Prabhupada's book, this is, you know, the Prabhupada says this is my recorded kirtana. It is bona fide, despite the smarter regulation that you're not allowed to, you know, to study from books. Kali Yuga, it's allowed. We're excused in Kali Yuga that we have to learn from books and not from hearing and repeating. Okay, so no one should tell you that, you know, that we're not getting real knowledge because we're getting it from a book. That we don't. That Prabhupada is not our Shiksha Guru. He's Shiksha Guru of everyone in ISKCON, and he will be for the duration of ISKCON's existence. Yes, Prabhu?
In this verse of the last canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, it says that reading Srimad Bhagavatam also gives. I don't exactly remember what the process to give, but some suppliers. It's right there. I don't know exactly, don't remember the word exactly.
Yes.
But it provided.
Shreza is reading. Yeah, I think just before you stepped in, the question was about this word pata, patana from yeah.
Oh.
Okay. Let's say that's a Kali Yuga translation. It's translated as reading. You know, it wasn't the system before Kali Yuga. You know, to learn the Vedas from printed books or even from manuscripts. Manuscripts were rare anyway. Yeah, there weren't. All the books of the Goswamis. Now we have, you know, hundreds of millions of copies that we publish of Bhagavad Gita. All the books of the Goswamis, up until printing presses appeared in India in the 18th century, end of the 18th century. There are hardly, almost no printing presses in India until almost 1800. All that time, there could not have been more than 40,000 copies of all the books of the Goswamis in existence. Couldn't have been. You know, tens of thousands only. Copies of all the books together, written by all the followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Maybe 40,000, I guess. Total of all the books were in existence in India. So they were very rare. You know, manuscripts are very rare. They're still rare. So it's, you know, you can't educate everybody just with the few manuscripts. Things have to be learned from the guru, from his mouth. That, anyway, that's the traditional system.
My technical note is that the Devanagari script, which you know now, was it developed as a tribute to Kali Yuga, or was it an original way of transliteration, or is it?
The Devanagari script that we have now is derived from the Brahmi script, and it probably appeared in the 9th or 10th century AD. So the Devanagari we know didn't exist more than 1,000 years ago, at most. Who knows what they were writing 5,000 years ago? The followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Rupa and Sanatana Goswami, wrote all their books in Bengali letters. So, anyway, it changes. The written alphabet changes over time. We have no idea what they were writing 5,000 years ago. The system of the alphabet was the same, as described in the Bhagavatam, as it emanated from Brahma's mouth, the different kinds of letters, and the order of the alphabet is fixed. But the actual characters that they write, that varies. It doesn't even matter what alphabet you use. It makes no difference.
Again, I want to ask a question here, so that, like you were explaining the training which is necessary for grihasthas to be successful, grihasthas, they should go through brahmachari training first. And the question is, how does it apply in our current state of affairs? What it should be?
What? Oh, well, anyway, it may not be possible for everyone, especially if someone is already married when he joins.
Not just married. You said that everyone should go through this training.
I think so. You know,
If you're joining ISKCON and you're not yet married, strongly recommended, spend 4 years or more getting, you know, as a brahmachari before you go and get married. Then you'll be proper, you'll be you'll have some hope of surviving that marriage. Some cases, some individuals may not be able to do that, but that's the recommendation.
I'm just asking, what you mean training?
In an ashram. Go to a temple, stay in the ashram, get trained up as a brahmachari. Live in the ashram. Serve the guru like that.
Prabhupada called his disciples to work with him as grihastha brahmacharis.
Yes.
Sometimes grihastha sannyasis.
Yes.
To put the sannyasis in place and the brahmacharis.
Yeah, I mean, Prabhupada arranged for training beyond just for the brahmacharis and sannyasis. That's novel. Previously, to get serious training as a Vaishnav, you'd have to become a Babaji. You know, the grihasthas were pretty much ignored. They give them the mantra and leave them to themselves. Even in the Gaudiya Math, I don't know how it was really in Bhakti Saraswati's time, but the modern Gaudiya Maths, they pretty much ignore their grihasthas too. Give them diksha and a few instructions and leave them to their own, you know, wits. But Prabhupada gave the same training, you know, and he had the grihasthas living in the ashram. He had women, unmarried women even, living in the ashrams. So he was very radical. He didn't want to restrict himself. Although I saw in the folio that Prabhupada told Tamalakrishna Raj on some occasion, some private conversation, that when I first came to America, I thought I would just make brahmacharis and sannyasis. But after being here for a short time, he changed his opinion on practically what had to be done when he saw what we were like. Not only that we're so fallen, but that even the women and those who are attached to women can also be engaged practically. Yes.
I'm sorry, the question might not be so related to the subject of the class.
Okay, that's okay.
As far as our training as brahmacharis and disciples in general is concerned, in this one, ideally one should live in the ashram of the spiritual master to get training and get association, direct association with the spiritual master. And we could attest to how much it is important for disciples to associate with the spiritual masters.
Yes.
But in this context, nowadays, it doesn't seem to be a practice at all. Spiritual masters give initiations and they travel all over the world. And disciples, they feel sometimes not abandoned, but deprived of the association. And we, in essence, we are not much different from Ritviks, because, you know, our guru might be present on the planet, but he is not accessible so easily unless you want to write to him by email. And what is the difference, and what should be ideally the direction for us to strive?
This should be a practical thing, not just a consideration of what's ideal. It's necessary that disciples get adequate guidance. If it can't be given in person by the Diksha Guru, then there has to be appointed a Shiksha Guru or someone to train up the disciple. Yes, please.
I have direct instruction
in
this from Shri
Prabhupada. Yes, please.
In writing, actually, what not just to me, but was his entire instruction to the movement. So it wasn't that I was a unique individual, but I got a letter that was fairly unique, although it's there. And Prabhupada gave four instructions. And the first instruction was to study Krishna consciousness in the association with the devotees, and for questions, to learn Krishna consciousness in the association of my God brothers and my God sisters, and to place questions to them. In other words, Srila Prabhupada elucidated, without utilizing the word, that actually one should take the senior devotees as Siksha Gurus. Not as a business of guru, but I'll explain it.
Yes.
Because he makes it very clear by the choice of words and the pronouns that he uses in the letter. He says, now study this Krishna consciousness as has been outlined by the spiritual master. He wrote this letter to me
yes.
in 1970. He was the only spiritual master.
Yes.
No, except for a few loose cannons, no one was interested to become a spiritual master. You know, there was some lusty, ambitious person, there was two who wanted to become a spiritual master. Other than those persons who were immediately put in their place, there was only one spiritual master. Prabhupada said, don't take instruction from me, but as outlined by the spiritual master, means the Shastra that Prabhupada was representing, the Parampara that he was representing. And study this in association of your God brothers and God sisters. If you have further questions, you may put these to your temple president, who happens to be Rupanuga. And then, if he cannot answer, then you may ask me. So actually, the principle was very strongly emphasized throughout Prabhupada's presence in ISKCON, that the devotees not have this highfalutin idea that I'm going to take instruction from my guru, but actually be humble and to take instruction from the siksha gurus that Prabhupada is training, that actually should all be trained with the association of devotees.
Yes.
One should take siksha from the different types of siksha from the devotees. And if that is some unclarity, then one can go to someone a little more advanced or more advanced for clarity. And then, in the very end, if there's something that's not clear, then one can go to the spiritual master. So in this, said that actually the training should be there, and then get thoroughly trained. And then once one is thoroughly trained to assist, not him,
yes,
but he directly and specifically said, although I actually, for 6 years, directly assisted him, but he outlined in the beginning that one should assist the temple president.
Yes.
One should view the temple president as Srila Prabhupada's representative and not attempt to assist him directly. He didn't say not to assist him directly, but actually the instruction was very clear to no other focus, just to assist the temple president. And then later on, as need be, one can help. And the idea was that one should try to help to establish Krishna consciousness through these three processes in every town and village. So throughout Prabhupada's dealing, the movement from the very beginning to the time he left, he kept this intact, that you have the siksha gurus throughout the movement. And it didn't displace him in any way. But actually, when you joined, actually, Prabhupada really placed you in the hands of other persons. And except for maybe 5% of the devotees, he had very little interaction. And except for about 1% of the devotees, he gave really very little direct training. And so therefore, this is a very intelligent system that how to develop Krishna consciousness. And if one thinks I only have my guru, then actually one is immediately bereft of the great advantage that the Hare Krishna movement offers, which is that there are many gurus.
Yes.
Oh, I have only one guru. Immediately, that's a lacking. Actually, there are so many gurus. And that doesn't in any way contradict the special relationship one has with one's spiritual master.
Thank you. Then it's...
To some extent, because of course it's not very good. I mean, they complement one another, these relations. But the devotees select a particular personality, a Vaishnava as a spiritual master, because he or she inspires him the most in spiritual life. It's natural he or she wants to get close relations with the spiritual master in training. It's also is a way of watching the person act and speak in a particular way, not just giving some instructions about one day-to-day service, but just watching the person act in a particular way, typical association. I think Prabhupada was quite the same. He was kind of lamenting that I wish I could give direct training to all my disciples, but what can I do?
Yeah, that's the ideal that's difficult to keep, you know, the situation of ISKCON. And it creates problems. It's not that, oh, everything's fine. We do have situations where disciples are not getting adequate instruction and they're out of touch with their gurus. And something should be done. We should develop the culture of shiksha. You know, the devotees should not think that they only have one person to listen to. And there's, you know, been misunderstandings about that. Serious.
Actually, most of the large percentage of our advanced devotees who, judging by their advancement, by their achar, by their personal behavior, by their advancement internally in Krishna consciousness, and by their external application of that in terms of preaching, cultivating other devotees. Most of those devotees actually had very little association with Prabhupada.
Yes.
And associated with him by instruction of those who did have association with him,
yes.
Instruction through Prabhupada's literature, and very few had direct guidance from Prabhupada. So this is the action of the spiritual master.
Yes.
This is very, very important. If this is not understood, then ISKCON will remain a very flimsy, small organization. And if it's understood, then as Prabhupada grew this organization very quickly, and in many ways very nicely, despite us, then things can be very solid. Those who understood this, the Vani being more important than the Vani, and what the Vani actually means, which Prabhupada said, instruction from the spiritual master, which means not isolated.
Yes.
Then they became very potent. And they didn't go. They didn't go. I'm thinking of a group of persons, 95% of whom are still around, and very few of those persons, they had association with Prabhupada. But they had association in these different ways. So those who had his association for clarification.
Yes.
Or through his words.
Yes. Books. And serving him. Connections to service.
Serving him in his desire.
Yes.
Which he said. Even though I was just brand new to the book, he said, every nook and corner, every town, every village.
Yes.
So, all right, yes.
Actually, the Shiksha is so powerful. I think it might work for the bubble. But, for instance, if you had an ISKCON, better quality of association, personal
judgment. Well, it might help if we had more spiritual masters, good ones. Not just let everybody be spiritual, but have more trained up, properly functioning spiritual masters. Then you could go to you could have your local guru who's nearby, who's available, and not, be so far away from your guru. If there are more gurus, then then more association can be given.
But if one is always looking on the other side of the fence, one might not see something very nice for people. It's like when I joined.
Yes.
I mean, when I joined Guru Grahi Maharaj, it was George. And he was in the temple 2 months.
Yes.
But I took him because of my own orientation being in India before. I took Guru Ganuga actually as my picture group. But I never asked him for diksha. Because wasn't going to ask for diksha. Anyway, I took him as my Siksha Guru.
Yes.
And I took all the devotees as my Siksha Guru.
Yes.
And they gave me wonderful instructions. Because Krishna can act through this.
Yes.
So these persons, Pralabhananda Swami, Grahi Swami, Govinda Swami, they were just bhaktas in the temple. But because the mood of the temple was that everybody was a guru. That not that you don't discriminate, but actually it's a missing mentality of looking for their advancement. So if we think no one is advanced, then you know what? We see no advancement. But if we start to look, oh, how is this devotee advanced? How is this devotee advanced? How is that devotee advanced? Both in some shastra or by realization or by activity. So if we see that, and then we say, oh, how can I learn from them, which is Prabhupada's direct instruction in this letter, and although there might be one little statement here about his way he manages it, was that this mood of looking for the gems, maybe in the rough as you, is a nice little thing.
Yes.
Oh, this describe this devotee is not advanced enough for me to learn anything. Then that is there, the Amritam or Dhammitam. Oh, so then you will learn nothing. But as soon as one thinks, oh, what can I learn? Then even the most neophyte devotee who's coming to the temple for the first time, one can see, oh, there's this I can learn from this devotee. So it's a matter of one sets one in mind that one will learn nothing except from guru. Or if one says, oh, I'll only learn from these who have these symptoms. But actually one can learn Krishna consciousness even from that person who's come the very first time. One would say, oh, you see this nice enthusiasm? I should learn the enthusiasm. How much more enthusiastic he is today than Like this, someone is just cleaning the temple. Like in Hungary, I go to Hungary, you see how nice it was. They will not leave one spot. So one can sit there and think, oh, do you see how they are my Siksha Guru? So if one wants Siksha Guru, all of a sudden there's so many Siksha Gurus. And if one wants no Siksha Guru, then all of a sudden there's no Siksha Guru. It's a mysterious thing, because Krishna is present in the heart of every living entity. He will act in the heart of every living entity. And this is, one does not see Krishna in the heart of the living entity, and one will not get the chip. Mysterious.
Thank you, bro. Okay, we'll stop here. Thank you. All glory to Srila Prabhupada. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.